All right, welcome to another edition of the TOT Cast. My name's Ryan Greco, and this episode I'm being joined by Chris Okranitz and Damar Grant. So, gentlemen, how are we doing today? Damar, how's it going?
Great, happy to be back on the pod.
We missed you.
I missed you too, buddy.
Chris, I missed you too, Damar. What's going on here? No love for me, brother?
You're all right.
All right, let's see how it is. Click on the X there. We'll just keep this going.
Oh, no. No,
I'm sorry. Okay, it's okay, Chris. I love you too.
Sorry, Damar. If your call unexpectedly drops, you know who to blame.
Okay.
So, no, as always, gentlemen, I mean, I think, first of all, congratulations is in order to the Cleveland Cavaliers. LeBron James now cementing his legacy that he is now officially better than Kobe Bryant.
Whoa, sorry.
Sure.
I'll own it.
I guess for some people, they needed this to validate that for them.
Well, I'm sure it'll validate for a lot of people, but even though, you know, it kind of already was a foregone conclusion to anyone who actually watched basketball, but, you know, neither here nor there.
Okay, more importantly, though, there's two other things that happen before you go down this rabbit hole, which is just ridiculous.
Oh, I'm ready for it already.
Okay, LeBron decided to stay in Cleveland today. Well, apparently he said at the parade that I'm coming home, I'm staying here, I don't want to leave Cleveland, I love it. And then we had a trade. Derrick Rose and his one knee got traded to New York City to join the Knicks and their five players. And Phil Jackson, of course. Oh, I'm just saying, they have nothing, and he's a shell of his former self. But, yeah, he's going there for Jose Calderon, Robin Lopez, and Jeremy Grant. So I feel like that's kind of newsworthy. Some people still think Derrick Rose is an all-star, or potentially could be, so that's a big trade.
I'm getting a kick out of Knicks fans right now just going off about, that's it, we're in the playoffs, boys, we're going to shock the world. And that, you know, just a lot of that New York rhetoric that we all know and love.
They're in the East, so, like, they could still make the playoffs, like, you know, Porzingis will be a year older, but then Melo will also be a year older. But they have Derrick Rose now, you know. They have something. They have a point guard. They have a point guard. That is a thing for them now, because that has not been a thing for them for the past couple of years. So, the point of attack is going to be great. Derrick Rose is still a good defender. So it's a benefit on the court, but I can't really. It's a rental, because his contract ends after next year. I think he has a player option, but he's obviously going to opt out.
Well, he'd be crazy not to, right, to think he's a max player. But you actually think he's a good defender? He graded as one of the worst defenders this year for the guards. I think he was, like, 84th out of 88th in, like, defensive efficiency.
I guess maybe my knowledge of Derrick Rose is antiquated because I don't really watch the Bulls that often unless they're, like, killing the Raptors and then they look like they're the best team in the league.
This is true. I'm kind of curious how you think he's going to, like, help Porzingis develop, because he's going to be the guy facilitating the offense you'd expect, right? And he can't really – he doesn't have that first step anymore to blow by guys and get to the lane like we saw him do so many times in his MVP seasons in Chicago – or his MVP season, sorry. I just don't know how he's going to work in New York with the way they're playing.
They were playing Jose Calderon.
Oh, no, that's fair.
Well, you don't think Jose Calderon was getting it done?
Literally anything is better. Like, I think he's easily the worst starting point guard in the league. So just anybody better than him will make – the entire team better. I just don't see the downside on the court for that 1 year. Don't see the downside.
I'm hearing some scorned lover syndrome right there, Damar.
The risk reward is worth it for the Knicks.
Well, of course.
But at the same time, the way Hornacek played in Phoenix was really up tempo. Derrick Rose showed this year in Chicago that he doesn't really fit that up tempo offense. The whole pace and space thing that Fred Hoiberg wanted instill in Chicago, it didn't work out with him. Like, him and Jimmy Butler couldn't coexist together on the court in that style of offense. How the hell are him, Melo, and Porzingis going to coexist? Question mark.
I've been watching this, like, I've been thinking about this trade, and I think it's just, like, a lose-lose, because if he sucks, then the Knicks suck, right? But if he's good, then at the end of the season, he's going to leave, or unless the New York media and the lifestyle doesn't entrances him to stay. He's going to end up leaving if they're good, and he's going to end up staying, or probably even leaving anyways if he sucks.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think also for what it's worth, though, to point out is that Jimmy Butler was not the same type of player that Carmelo Anthony is. I think that Derrick Rose, well, obviously he's better, but what I'm really trying to say is that Jimmy Butler was also a guy who tried to work around the perimeter a little bit more consistently compared to Carmelo Anthony. Anthony is going to be a little bit more in his mid-range game. He likes his little jab step and his mid-range jumpers that, you know, the NBA has proven that's probably the worst percentage shot you could take in the league, but I digress. He's still one of the best at it. But at the same time, that's giving Derrick Rose a lot of room to move around the perimeter. So it doesn't really seem like any of these guys are going to necessarily bump into each other, if you know what I'm trying to say, when they're running their offense. So I still feel like, much to both your points, it's a low risk, high reward scenario if Derrick Rose even is just marginally as good as he was during his MVP season, or even just, I mean, you know, even just some of the flashes we saw in the last 2 years here and there.
Yeah, like once every 36 games, maybe, if you're lucky. He can't shoot the three. He can't defend. He can't drive by guys to get to the lane anymore. I mean, you're asking for a lot to go right with Derrick Rose, but at the same time, I mean, this is kind of like a free ticket for him. It's a chance to play in an offense that should favor him if Hornacek basically says, hey, here's the keys, do what you got to do. But at the same time, if you're Hornacek, are you really willing to do that? I mean, I don't know.
He's been designing point guard offenses for the past couple of years, so I'd assume so. I just can't wait to see it on the floor, because I actually want to see what Derrick Rose looks like in a Knick uniform.
Me too.
This is the first thing I want to see, and then after that I want to see, like, you know, I honestly want to watch their games, because I'm really excited to just see how it works for them.
Well, another thing with the Knicks here, if we're going to make a nice little segue, is they donated a nice gift to the Raptors a couple of years ago when they took Andrea Bargnani, and they gave us the first round pick for this year, which ended up becoming number 9 overall. So with that in mind, who do you see the Raptors taking at 9? I know you were a heavy lobby for Scalabissery, and the three of us all like them. Is there anybody else? Or are you still all Scal Nation?
I will forever. I see the downside in Scal, whereas if he's not capable of gaining weight, then people would say he just gets pushed around, but that is such an easy thing to do. You know, you're a professional athlete now. You just go to the gym, you just eat a lot of food, and just continue to play the same way. I don't really see how that's a downside for him.
Yeah.
No. I think me personally, I'd rather have Sabonis, to be honest. I think that's a guy who's got a little bit more natural size to him, a little bit more of a polished game in the post. But right now, he's a better rebounder. So, I mean, I think that's also something that the Raptors are going to need in the near future. You know, and there's been a lot of talk as well going around about the Toronto Raptors really hoping or trying or needing to get a pick that can help right now, as opposed to being, you know, I'll say it now, 2 years away from being 2 years away.
Is that 2 years away now?
Yeah, he's about to enter that stage, man.
There you go.
Only 2 years away now.
Even just with that said, though, like I said, I think Sabonis is just the best, is the most NBA-ready player that we could grab out of the draft right now with that number 9 pick.
What do you project him being? Like, say everything, or not even everything, say most things break right for him. What do you see him doing?
I could see him being a little bit more of an athletic version of Mozgov.
Who?
Sabonis.
Really? He doesn't have the size, though. He's more of like, I'd say he's like a ceiling of Paul Millsap and a floor of Luis Scola. He's very crafty. He plays with his back to the basket. He's a fantastic passer.
Mm-hmm.
Mid-range is okay, but after that, you're asking him to basically develop a shot that, quite frankly, isn't there yet. No. But back to the basket, anything within the block, he's physical underneath. Like, he's kind of a hybrid Millsap Scola. So,
and I like that physicality. So
he looks like poor man's Blake Griffin to me. Basically, everything Blake Griffin has, but lesser, especially the athleticism. Right, he has, like you mentioned before, he has crafty finishes sometimes, and he's also a very good passer, and he's like really really aggressive on the boards. You see him like boxing out people, or maybe he doesn't really jump over anybody for boards, so he uses his body a lot more. But he just reminds me of Blake Griffin, just like a worse version. He even has like people will say the T-Rex arms of Blake Griffin, but his wingspan's really short too. Mm-hmm. He's like what five? Or sorry, not five. Like 6'10", 6'9". He's just kind of, I don't know. That's what it just seems like to me.
It, to be fair, it does kind of go a little bit against what Masai's philosophy is with long and lanky and all that. But
oh, he always loves his length and he loves his athleticism. Those are two things he's drafted consistently over the past couple of years.
Yeah, Dave, Scal has that.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I agree with Scal. I mean, let's say Jaylen Brown slips from Cal, and it's between Jaylen Brown, Scal Abisonry, and Sabonis. Which one of those three would you take?
Good question. I kind of like Jaylen Brown just because he's got I like to have really big, like, guards and a small forward. He's 6'6", so he's pretty big for a guard. Great on defense. To have, like, that huge wingspan. I still think I would take Scal, honestly. I'm just a huge Scal proponent, man.
No, I like Scal, too. I mean, some of the knock on Scal from a lot of what I've read and what Scouts have been posting is that he's like a workout warrior. One-on-one and any, like, drills, he kills it. But when you put him in five-on-five play, he looks a little lost at times. But I'm with you. I think his upside is tremendous, and it's somebody it's worth finding out. The thing with Jaylen Brown is I think you're really buying into his high school film and the way he played there, where he was a better shooter. He's able to get to the rim. Because at Cal last year, I don't know how much you guys watched him play, but the Pac-12 is a lot more up-tempo basketball. And at times, he looked lost. He would just kind of drive to the rim and kind of look like a bull out of a cage where he'd literally just try and run guys over. And that didn't really work out too well for him. So like, he's very smart off the court. Like, his IQ is amazing. He's known for all that. But I think on the court, he's still got a lot to develop in terms of the way the game's played. So I think you're really buying into him being a long-term project as well. But for the Raptors, what do you guys think would develop better? A big man or a shooter? Like, what do you think would be quicker? Because you're basically asking Jaylen Brown to be a long shooter, like a three that can shoot the rock, whereas Scal, you're asking to dominate the paint and defend. Like, which kind of player do you feel develops quicker in the NBA today?
Even today, it's still the shooters. It's still the guards. Yeah? Big men have always been the guys that have taken a little bit longer to develop. I mean, Jonas Valanciunas is a great example of that. We're just starting to see the fruits of his labor this season with the performances that he was putting together. And it's, I don't know, I just feel like it's a lot more of a free-flowing game for a guy who plays on the wing, a guy who's also allowed to make a few more mistakes than a guy in the post would. You're getting more touches, you're getting more comfortable with the ball, you're not doing as many off-screens as a guy in the post would in the NBA level, and everybody here knows how incredibly fast that can be at times. So I think the learning curve is just not as strong, it's not as sharp or as steep for those guys, because they can still use their quickness and they don't necessarily have to bang and be physical every single time they go on the floor, especially in an 82-game regular season, going up against other guys who are still trying to learn just as much as they are, because it's a very young league now, right? So I think that it's still a guards league when it comes to development. And so if that was the case, I would definitely take Jaylen Brown, because at the end of the day, I'd try and hold true to the draft philosophy of take the best available player regardless of the position, because you never know. You might pass up on anybody that you want to give. I mean, you can name off a ton.
No.
Wait, what? Let's say that last part again.
I'm just saying that you could, you know, there's been plenty of teams that have passed up on really, really good generational players even at times because it didn't fit what they were looking for in the moment, as opposed to just going for the best available player.
Yeah, I can get behind that. But, you know, it's just like when I watch Jaylen Brown, I just see a lot of athletic ability. You know, he's good at finishing at the rim. But if he can't, like his ball handling isn't that great and he can't really shoot the ball. Like, you can buy into the high school thing where he's shooting it pretty well against high schoolers, people that he's much taller than, or if you're watching anything recently, his three-point shooting is not that great. He's great. He's great on the glass, though. Really appreciating somebody being 6'6 and being amazing on the glass.
So I kind of get the vibe that we all agree the Raptors are down to three players that we'd like to see at least. Scal Abisonry, Domantas Sabonis, Jaylen Brown. If he was to fall, let's say. And after that, I mean, you can make a case for a few other guys, but I feel like those are like the two to three guys we're all in agreement on here.
I agree.
Yeah.
I think, and just to, you know, even to sum it all up, I would take Jaylen Brown over those two guys again if he was available, just because, you know, it's also a smaller league. It's a longer, more athletic league. But, I mean, we're in an era now where guys are playing the 4 and 5 at 6'7". So it's not exactly entirely impossible for him to get some of those shots off now, as opposed to how it was 10 years ago.
Okay, let me ask you guys this then. How do you feel about the Raptors potentially moving up? Because with a lot of rumors, the Celtics are shopping their pick. A lot of teams are shopping their pick. I mean, if you go on a list, you got Boston, Phoenix, Minnesota, Denver, Sacramento. They've all been rumored to be shopping their pick, right? So if you're the Raptors, is there somebody you see on the board that you would trade up and get potentially?
Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Yeah. There's fuck all after that.
Like,
there's nobody you guys would even think about.
There are pieces, but there's nobody that is like a standalone player that I can just like put anybody else around and make them better, you know?
Yeah.
Like everybody else, anybody else behind them is like a piece to a good team, but I would still have to build that, like I would still have to mold that player to becoming a very good player to put on my team. So, there's nothing really to trade up for unless it's like a sure thing right now. Plus, the Raptors need a big man, and they're a big man at the specific spot of ninth in the draft, so I wouldn't really trade up for anything.
Okay. Then what about this scenario? I know this is something that we saw, well, both, all three of us actually, I messaged you guys about when we saw it on Twitter, was after the Jeff Teague trade, there was a lot of talk about how, let's say Horford doesn't re-sign Atlanta, do you blow it up? And then obviously Paul Millsap's name floated around. And it's all speculation at this point, but he's somebody that would obviously be a perfect fit for the Raptors. What do you feel is the right package to go out and get a guy like Paul Millsap, knowing the Raptors have two first-round picks this year and next year? What's appropriate to kind of make a package to go out and get a Millsap?
Okay, I would trade Terrence Ross, the Corey Joseph. I think that brings him up to 17 or maybe even 18 million because he has the poison pill contract, right?
So. Yep.
Is what he's being traded for now is based upon what he has or what he's making next season. So he's making what, 14 million, and then
it skyrockets to a lot. I have to pull up the number. I'll pull it up.
Yeah, he's making 14 million, and then Corey Joseph is making about 3 or 4 million. So, and that's about 17 to 18 million, and then Paul Millsap is making 18 million right now. So that seems pretty even, and then you just pile on, you know, the ninth. And then probably the 27th or maybe next year's first rounder. Maybe if the Hawks are blowing it up, I mean, that's a pretty good deal because then you get those two good pieces, the point guard, the backup Schroeder, and then you have Terrence Ross, who's he's a prospect, let's say that. And then you get, let's say if they wanted to get that power forward right back, but a younger version. You know, Scal will be on the board, and then they'll also have the 27th or even first round next year. They'll have another chance to pick somebody else. They'll just be able to make their team younger really quickly, actually. Not a lot of teams get to make their team that much younger and better at the same time.
No, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, that's true.
Millsap's making 20 mil next year and then 21 mil the year after that.
Okay, so they would need to make up a little bit. They would have to do. We'd have to like sign James Johnson to like $3 million a year, and then make it like unguaranteed for like second or third year or something like that.
Yeah, financially it'd be tough to make work out actually now that I think about it. It would take Terrence Ross and another player, but I don't know who that other player would be.
Yeah, Corey Joseph, and then they would have to just like scrounge together a couple more million and then ship it off with a couple draft picks. Hope the Hawks say yes.
Well, would you be comfortable moving a player like Corey Joseph, though? I feel like he's a nice solid backup point guard. Like, I know it makes sense financially to move him because it just makes it fit, but is he somebody you'd really want to part ways with, though?
Would you rather have Paul Millsap or Corey Joseph?
No, I know. Yeah, it's a no-brainer.
Okay, so...
But then this leads to another point, though. Something that you mentioned off the air to me was that you don't like the idea of the Raptors going all in, basically trying to win now. Would that not kind of kickstart that theory where if you're going to get Millsap, you are going all in, so you're mortgaging the future pretty much?
If I'm not the GM of the Raptors, Masai Ujiri is, and he's been talking about going all in for the past, like, 3 weeks, you know, he's talking about, like, there's no player in the draft that would make an impact now, and we're trying to re-sign DeMar DeRozan right now. So I'm hearing a lot of nows and not a lot of futures. That means, to me at least, that they're doing right now stuff. They're making that trade if they can.
Yeah, I don't know. Personally, I wouldn't try and get rid of Joseph, but I mean, there's other ways to get around it. And heck, I mean, at this point, I'd probably just try and go all in on Horford if you're going to do all in.
Well, you'd be really tough to kind of work around the rest of the cap, though. That's the thing.
Oh, no, someone's got to go, but...
Well, no,
yeah, you would have to shred the contract, so you would have to, like...
Yeah.
Like, you do exactly what I just said, but you're sending them to the 76ers for, like, maybe draft picks or trading exceptions.
Mm-hmm. Well, you'd be signing Horford, then you would re-sign DeRozan to the max deal after as well, so you can exceed the cap as Bird rights. The ownership said numerous times they'd be willing to be a luxury tax team. That would make them a luxury tax team, but they'd still need to get rid of some players and basically run with Bebe, Bruno, DeLon Wright, and Norman Powell all in their entry-level contracts on their starting roster, on their active roster next year. No more of this busing back and forth through the D-League. Like, they're on the active roster. Because you need them to be there just for money's sake, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So I don't know if they'd be comfortable doing that. Like, they'd run their depth pretty thin.
Right, but send someone to the D-League.
Back to what you asked about, like, you know, going all in or not. I don't think they should. I don't think they're better than Cleveland. I don't even think they're better than Cleveland if they have Paul Millsap. And LeBron is going to be a fixture in the East much until 2020. And, I don't really think, you know, I don't think Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan are going to be better in the next 3 years versus the Cavs, you know, in the next 3 years. So that also
begs the question as well, though, because you're also not just working with how good Cleveland's going to be in the next couple of years. You also got to kind of remember and work with, you know, what your guys are going to be capable of in the next couple of years. And if this is going to be the prime of their careers, specifically for Lowry as well, who's now, from this point on, is probably going to be start slowly but surely slipping downward as far as his prime.
The wrong side of 30.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's got to also be a point where you're going to go, okay, this timing may not be perfect against who we're facing in the East and the Cavaliers, but they also know that this might be their best shot as a team that they have right now in the roster.
That's not necessarily true, though. When you think about it, like, their two best players are DeMar DeRozan, Kyle Lowry. Kyle Lowry is 31, and then DeMar DeRozan is turning 28 or 27 this year. So by the time, like, say you get DeMar DeRozan on 5 years, he's going to be in his mid, like, early 30s by the time Jonas is turning 27, and then you have, you know, Norman Powell, you know, he's going to be in his mid-20s, and then Terrence Ross would also be in his late 20s. So, like, everybody else that is not the two best players is finally coming into their own when they're getting old.
So I kind of get the vibe you think this core is kind of like, I don't want to say a mirage, but it's just going to be that typical middle-of-the-pack NBA team stuck in no-man's land that isn't quite an elite contender, but they're always a fringe contender. They're always going to be there, but they're not necessarily going to be taken serious.
Yeah, probably, you know, we'll make it to the Eastern Conference Finals and then get eliminated in 5 or 6 every year for the next 2 or 3 years. You guys think that they're going to be better than Cleveland at any point?
Not unless LeBron leaves.
And not unless they make a huge free agent signing. They got to sign somebody that's better than both DeRozan and Lowry. Or they have to sign 2 or 3 guys that are on the same level as DeRozan or Lowry.
Right. So the Kevin Durant dream is dead.
Oh, definitely.
So
all Toronto did. All Toronto did this playoff series was convince the guys they already have to stay. I don't think they convinced anybody to come.
Hold on. The Durant dream is dead for a year because he's going to sign the 1-1, and then him and Westbrook are going to opt out together, and then they're both going to come here. No, I'm just kidding. That's what, like, how many? But you know, you guys laugh, but how many teams in the NBA are praying for that right now? Like teams like the Lakers. The Knicks are like, oh, we have all salary cap space. Durant and Westbrook, we get them both if they opt out next year if Durant does the 1-1. So, right. I mean, it's a pipe dream for 29 teams in the NBA, or 28.
The Lakers media makes me laugh so hard.
Let me see. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, like, the Lakers media just kills me because I'm hearing it every other day about how DeRozan's coming. And I just can't help but shake my head at it and just thinking, you know, why would he spend the prime of his years basically going back to the future to when it was – when he was just coming into the league and the Raptors were in relatively the same position as what the Lakers are in right now. Why would he go back when he could also get the same amount of money in a market that arguably, even though most Americans don't want to admit it, is just as big as a Los Angeles or New York, obviously not as big, but in the same ballpark, and just try and basically win with a bunch of kids and Swaggy P and D'Angelo Russell. And I've never understood how LA has convinced themselves that because he's from Compton, they're all this, he's going to give up going to the East Finals every year to basically try and scrounge the 8th or 7th seed in the Western Conference.
You know why. You have to fill airwaves.
My one question about the Lakers, why does everybody include the Lakers in any sort of free agent?
Thank you.
I don't get it.
Because they won all these titles in the 70s and 80s and 2000s, and they're still glamorous.
I know they have like that supposed gravitas behind them is that, you know, they're a great team, but like bad. And nobody wants to be on a bad team anymore. Like, no, you can get the same amount of endorsements. You can get that in Oklahoma City, just as many as in L.A. In L.A., you'd probably get more local things, but nationally, everybody knows who Kevin Durant is, even though he plays in Oklahoma City in middle of nowhere, right? And everybody knows, I wouldn't say everybody knows, but people know who Damian Lillard is, and people know who Paul George is, right? And they're not in the most lucrative markets. You don't have to be in New York to get recognition. LeBron is in Cleveland.
I'd take it a step further. I'd say that, you know, guys that are that good don't really have a life outside of basketball when the regular season is going on. And when I say that, I mean like all of the things that everyone's talking about, how great the cities are and the stuff that they do. A lot of that has to do with stuff young people do, go out, parties, connections and all that sort of stuff. But these guys don't have – anyone who's really worth a damn in the NBA that's worth those max contracts, at least back in the day before the huge salary caps, they weren't doing that stuff to begin with anyway during the regular season. In the offseason, that's where all these guys hang out anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Like why would they – why do they need to be in New York in the middle of February? Why do they need to be in Los Angeles when they're not even in Los Angeles for more than half the week? Like with road trips and things of that nature. Same thing with Miami. It's like Miami's a little bit different because it's a little bit more, much more competent ownership and management, which is also the same reason why those guys go there, though. Not because of the beaches.
Well, it's tax-free, too.
Well, there you go. And Texas as well. Same deal with the Spurs and the Mavericks. There's a reason the Mavericks were able to pull one out of their ass.
Shout out to Orlando.
There you go.
Orlando, too. They'll be big players this year with Frank Vogel there. They got enough space to sign a max guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, just to your point, Amar, it's completely preposterous for people to believe that just because the LA Lakers are the LA Lakers, that they're all of a sudden – that they're worth that. Once, you know, once again, it's all just hearsay for the ratings and the media markets and all that crap.
And everybody, I remember, like, people will point to Dwight Howard and Steve Nash going there. That's because, you know, it was a great team. It was going to be a good team. Kobe Bryant was there. They had Pau Gasol there.
And they just came off of finals.
We're just going to put all these two stars, three stars together, and we're going to make this awesome team. But, like, right now, there's nobody there. You have D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, like Swaggy P, Julius Randle, Larry Nance Jr. Like, it's just a shell of, like, any semblance of a team. Like, they're at the same level as the 76ers at this point.
They're lower.
Why would you go there if you're a free agent? Like, can somebody explain that to me?
No, but I feel like this Lakers vortex has sucked us in too far, though. I'm not going to lie to you. Because I feel like it's a topic of discussion.
Yeah. I have a medium to like actually talk about it, so I just don't understand why media people keep saying like somebody's going to the Lakers. Like nobody's going to the Lakers, man. They suck.
I can tell you from the media standpoint why. I mean, they're one of the most followed teams in all sports, and when you talk about it, those fans that follow that team will click on it, or they will listen, and they will talk about it, and you make money, and that's why they talk about them all the time.
Lakers are awful. Nobody's going there, man. Chill out.
Don't tell their fans that.
Durant's not coming. Al Horford's not coming. There's Russell Westbrook.
Look, they're in proverbial hell right now because the Clippers are better than them in every way.
In every way.
Okay, let's get back on track.
Let's rewind here and recap. I mean, we think the Raptors are going to take one of three guys, Jaylen Brown, Scalabissery, or Domantas Sabonis.
Agreed.
We think that they're not going to trade up.
No.
We think that the draft as a whole isn't very good. By the sounds of it, I mean, we all think that after 1-2, there's not much there. What about 27 with the Raptors? Who do you guys think they could take there? I think it gets pretty interesting for who they could take with their second first-round pick if they keep it. And before we even get to that point, though, when you look at the visits the Raptors have had, I know this is something that a lot of teams you can point to is when they have multiple, they have a player that visits multiple times, it's generally a good indication that they're interested in them. So when you look at who the Raptors have had for multiple visits, it's Stefan Jankovic, Diamond Stone, Dorian Finney-Smith. All those guys are late first-rounders, second-round players. Maybe Masai wants to trade back altogether.
trade back. Wow, that would be, yeah, I can understand that. Usually trading back, you try to get something like in the next draft or maybe...
Doesn't sound too far-fetched. Maybe he trades this pick to take another shot in the lottery next year and hopefully get lucky.
Yeah. I don't know. I can understand it. I don't know if he would do it. I don't know how much he's paying attention to the next year's draft versus this year's draft.
Oh, you better believe he's got a big board up for the next two drafts. I wouldn't doubt that for a second. But I just think it was just something like, I'm probably trying to read in between the lines a little too hard here with this. But I feel like it was something that maybe he's exploring.
I can, as a GM, it's your job to explore things like that, right?
Yeah.
I could imagine that he's thought of it. I don't know if it's, you can't tell if it's like a deep dive or a fleeting thought for him. We're not him, fortunately.
Okay, then what about 27? Let's say they keep both their picks. Who would you guys be looking at 27? Who intrigues you?
I have an interesting one just based off of some of the stuff that I've been seeing out there. SB Nation and CBS Sports have us going for, of all people, Thon Maker.
We both know quite well.
Yeah, and I find that interesting because, to your point, Chris, they haven't brought him in for a workout, obviously. But I also feel like, you know, and this is kind of funny, too, though, because I think whoever was putting together these mock drafts, I kind of got a kick out of their reasoning because they're sitting there, well, you know, Masai Ujiri likes long-term projects. He had a pretty good roster to work with at the time when he was making those draft picks for Caboclo and things like that. I don't think he's necessarily looking for long-term projects like a Thon Maker. And who's to say Maker is even going to fall that low, because there's a lot of teams, because of Maker being so guarded, not going to the 5-on-5 workouts, not basically doing anything of note in the past, in the year of 20, in the calendar year of 2016. His mysteriousness, the fact that he is such an enigma is actually his strength right now, because he's been breaking all sorts of physical records at the combine for anyone over the height of 6'11". So he's an athletic freak, which is enough to make anybody consider him as an option. Also, when you take into the fact that, I know this sounds almost even a little childish to say, but because Maker basically spent the last 2 years in the Raptors' backyard playing in Orangeville alongside Jamal Murray, another guy who's going to be a top 10 pick, hands down, I'm sure that the Raptors have sent a scout out there and taken a look at him over the course of the last 2 years at some point. So with all of those things in, you know, kind of in circulation, it would definitely be, to me, I think it would be the most interesting pick that they could take at 27. But do I think it's the smartest pick given everything that's going on with the Raptors right now? It would basically then be taking a flyer on something. So I don't know. What do you think,
Tamar? 27th pick in the draft, like, you know, that's a position where you are taking a flyer on anybody. Really, you're looking for like physical feats. You know, maybe I brought this up earlier, like before on the podcast, where, you know, somebody that deep in the draft, they don't really have the physical tools, or they're missing like something major in their game. So it's like, you know, the person doesn't really understand the game correctly, or like they're undersized for their position, right? So being Thon Maker, you just mentioned him like breaking records in the combine for weightlifting, or at his specific height,
vertical as well,
right? So I can see why, you know, you can totally, if you're a GM, you're just like, dude, this guy is nuts. He's like, he's basically a dream. But that would scare me as a GM, because it feels like a dream and this guy doesn't do it. Like, you know, he's just like, you can't even really consider if he's real or not, because he doesn't do anything in the 2006, like calendar year of 2016. You know, you kind of just see him, you know, and that's about it. You don't ever see him doing anything. I don't know if I would really pick him, just because I would be like, I'd be questioning whether or not I'm a good GM, just because I picked him on like work, like somebody mentioned him to me and I just like heard some words and saw some written things about him, but was not able to see him do anything.
I would bet a colossal amount of money the Raptors don't take him, even if he's sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
They've had 59 players in for visits. Thon Maker's not one of them. And I don't think that's because they've seen him in Orangeville. I think that's because they're just flat out not interested. Mm-hmm. You have guys in for workouts because you want to see how they interact with your coaching staff. When he's in high school, unless they had some private, super secret workout that basically avoids them from getting a tampering or anything like that kind of charge, I don't see why you wouldn't have him in for a workout. Like, you want to see how he interacts with your coaching staff. You want to see how he's interacting in various situations in a private workout or against, like, Bebe, because you can have players in there. And they didn't do that. So I think there's zero hope in hell that they draft him. And even, I know this is petty and we brought up on the last podcast, but seeing Masai Ujiri kind of walk by Thon and Ed Smith at the BioSteel game this year at the All-Star game, that wasn't a, I can't talk to you because you're a prospect in the NBA. That looked more to be like, I'm just not interested in talking to you. Because Masai Ujiri talks to everybody. I mean, this guy was taking photos with fans. He was talking with everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, he went out of his way to make sure people knew he's a good guy to talk to and he's friendly. And the way he walked by them was kind of like, get lost. Like, it's just something interesting.
No, kind of like the way you walk past people, like in the hallway, like they're just not on your radar.
Yeah. Like, I think if there's a player that they were going to take that they didn't have him for a workout, that was just a raw athlete that was, like, you know, worth taking the risk on, I think it's a guy like DeAndre Bembry from St. Joe's. Like, he's 6'6", he's a junior. He's one of the best passers in this draft. He's an elite athlete. He can defend the wing. He's got that unique small forward, stretch four capability that you want in the new NBA. I just feel like that's a better athlete for the Raptors to take if they were going to take a flyer on somebody that, one, they didn't bring in for a workout, and two, was just a pure athlete. I feel like he'd be a better fit.
Yeah, man, at the 27th position, it's a crap. It's truly a crapshoot at the 27th.
Yeah. You're just lucky if you can get somebody that'll last in the league.
Yeah, exactly. Usually, like, you know, at the first couple of spots, you're just like, okay, these are my, like, my rocks, you know, my blue chips. And then, like, in the lotteries, like, you know, there's going to be good people there. Kind of, you know, it's kind of easy to miss on the lottery, but you can also hit. And then, like, further and further you get away from the top 10, and then the 15s, and then you're in the 20s. Like, it doesn't really, it almost feels like it doesn't really matter who you draft.
Then it gets into the pebbles. I feel like that's what you're trying to say.
Yeah, it is like, you know, just to use like a sock example, like you're in the penny socks, man. You're just like trying to, trying to see if I can get something.
I just want some ROI. I want some return on investment.
If I could get any sort of return on what I put into this, that would be fantastic. That's what it feels like in the second round and like the late first round.
Well, I feel like there's five players that if they took a 27 would have a chance of panning out. I mean, I don't think some of them will be there, but if I had to give you guys like five guys that I'd keep an eye on, Denzel Valentine at Michigan State, I think he'll go much higher. But but let's just say in a perfect
scenario. Yeah, Valentine's pretty good.
He falls. I think he's somebody who could have success.
Yeah, he's had a couple of good years in college.
Check Diallo's a personal favorite of mine. I mean, he's like mini Bismack. I mean, he's only 6'9", but his arms are ridiculous. He's got the wingspan. He could be somebody that the Raptors might be able to turn into this, I don't know, project player that can, you know, put in good minutes off the bench and defend a little bit, rebound. Offensive game's limited, but he can at least chip in. Bryce Johnson's another guy I like. I mean, he got progressively better. He actually broke the record at UNC this year for the most double-doubles in regular season, which is pretty crazy when you think about some of the guys that have came through there. For big men, especially like guys like Sean May, Tyler Hansbrough, they were very productive in college. So I feel like he could be somebody who's a decent, mature, he's a senior, power forward for the Raptors. DeAndre Bembry, somebody I mentioned as well. And the last guy I think that is somebody that they've had in and they might be interested in is Patrick McCaw. He's a shooting guard from UNLV. He's not bad. I mean, he's athletic. He can shoot a bit. He's not necessarily somebody who's going to move the needle, but maybe he could develop into like a Norman Powell type guy.
Here's my thing with, like, I noticed you said Bryce Johnson. If I have a power forward on my team and he can't shoot, I no longer want him on my team. You need to have at least four players that can shoot the ball, which is like, you know, that could, if I was in the 90s and I said that to you, you'd be like, are you crazy? I only need two guys that can shoot the ball. But it's so easy to guard somebody that doesn't shoot the ball. Like, it makes person easier to guard and the team easier to guard. So that's why I really like Scal, because he can shoot, man. Yeah. He can shoot from mid, and he can shoot if you really needed to, you could teach him how to shoot from three.
So why do the three of us like Sabonis so much then? Because he's really a mid-range and in kind of guy.
I'm low on Sabonis. You guys like
really? Sabonis. Oh, you don't like Sabonis that much, eh?
I told you he's poor man's Blake Griffin, man. Blake Griffin is,
Well, if he's poor man's Blake Griffin, I'll take him, because Blake Griffin you could still use.
Yeah, he shoots great from mid-range. Yeah, you can still use Blake Griffin, but one of his main selling points is athletic ability.
Which Sabonis isn't, though. Sabonis isn't like an elite athlete. He's just okay. He's just really physical.
Yeah, exactly.
I just like his tenacity, like, well, to a point, tenacity, I guess, is a synonym for physicality. He's
got a high motor.
High motor. Yeah, he's got a good scoring touch under the rim, and I think that's just something, you know, even just coming off the bench for Valanciunas at some point in the next couple of years, having him come off and just be another constant under the rim, being there and being able to finish buckets, especially if Biombo ends up leaving or if anything along that nature, you've got a guy who can still kind of do that. More likely, like I said, coming off the bench, because he's not the kind of guy I would ever see on the floor with Valanciunas at the same time.
No, I feel like he'd be a really good bench player, too. I mean,
and that's what it's about at this point.
Do you want to draft somebody as a bench player in the draft?
Because that's what a lot of these guys, though, and then that's this draft, though. We all said it. We all were in agreement at the beginning of this episode that there's only one or two guys here that are really going to have an opportunity to be starters and all-stars. Well, more specifically, all-stars. Everybody else is a crapshoot. And that's how it is with a lot of these drafts.
You would want to get somebody with upside. That's in the later parts of the lottery. You want to get somebody with upside.
All I know is that Andre Iguodala now comes off the bench, and he's an integral part of his team. And it's an extreme example, obviously.
Majorly situational.
And that's kind of what I'm just trying to get at now. At this point, is if you're a team like the Toronto Raptors. You're not gonna get a guy through the draft that is gonna be like a Lowry or a DeRozan for a very long time, unless you're trading up, like Ujiri has been kind of trying to do the last couple of years, because you know you're gonna be doing well in the standings. So why not try and build your team on things that are gonna be useful as far as depth?
I'd be for that, and the reason why is a friend of mine brought this up off the air. He mentioned to me that this draft reminds him a lot of the 2006 draft. And I'm looking back at the 06 draft, and I was kind of like, holy shit, does it ever. The 06 draft had a lot of hype around guys because they didn't have a lot of good players, so they hype guys up to basically masquerade behind, you know, they're top 10 guys, so they're good. Mm-hmm. When really, they were just average guys. I mean, listen to this 06 draft, okay? And Raptors fans remember this, obviously, because we took Andre Bargnani, number one overall.
Instead of LaMarcus Aldridge, by the way.
Tire fire. So Aldridge went to Adam Morrison, who's cleaned himself up and looks pretty good coming out of Lamborghini. I don't know if you guys saw.
Oh, no, I did.
Okay, so he went number three. Tyrus Thomas, number four. Sheldon Williams, five. Brandon Roy, the poor guy with his knees, went six. Randy Foy, seven. Rudy Gay, eight. Patrick O'Bryant, nine. Mohamed Sané, 10. J.J. Redick, 11. I won't go on any further than that, but the point is that draft wasn't very good. No. And 10 years later, we're in the exact same scenario where, you know, there's one or two guys, and then it's like a lot of average guys.
You know what's funny?
The lowest of key snipe at Kyle Lowry because he was drafted number 24.
No, I knew he was there. Don't worry.
Lowest of keys. He's like, oh, yeah. That's garbage anyway. It's too bad he's our starting power forward.
If you want me to low-key snipe somebody for you, go look at who got taken 40th overall. That'd be Eastern Commerce legend, Denham Brown.
Jesus Christ.
Oh,
the only guy to score 100 points in Canadian high school basketball history. There's your low-key snipe of the night.
Is that a segment we're going to do now, Chris?
No.
Low-key snipe of the night. TOT Cast Basketball Edition.
Oh, our boy Paul Millsap went 47th in that draft, too. I didn't even know that. Damn.
So I guess it wasn't as shit as we thought it was.
Nah, it's still trash.
Or maybe the GMs were trash at the time.
We're looking at, you know, let's say, for example, we're looking at the 2006 draft. Like, we're looking at, like, the 20th, the 21st pick, 24th pick, right? There are good players that get drafted later. It's just, it's something you just got to bet on, you know, like Rajon Rondo was 21st. Rajon Rondo, it wasn't, you know, if you look at his comp as a player, you know, he's not necessarily super athletic. He doesn't really shoot it well, but there's just like, you have one or two really good skills. And if you can build on those two skills or a couple skills, that's what makes you a really good player in this league.
Yeah.
You gotta look at like how much better somebody can get from where they already are. If you're outside of like the top three, you can see, like, you know, Ben Simmons is probably going to be, like, this 6'10" point guard. Or you can see that Brandon Ingram is going to be able to guard, like, four positions. Like, you can already see that, right? That's, like, it's evident in their play style and body. But in the later parts of the draft, you got to be, like, well, this guy is, like, really, really good at passing. So maybe we can pick him up here, and maybe he'll be, like, our pass-first point guard.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of pass-first, I think we could sum up the overall attitudes of NBA drafts with this one meme I remember seeing. And it was the class of 96. And they said, I think it went along the lines of, out of all the players you saw here, who would have thought the best one would have been the white kid from Canada?
Oh, you read that piece in the Players Tribune.
No, I saw that meme a couple of years ago on Facebook, and I just got a kick out of it. I'm like, that really does sum up the NBA drafts on some years. You just don't know.
Wasn't Kobe and Ray Allen in that draft?
He was, but I think the meme was along the lines of whoever had the most, who would have thought the guy with the most MVPs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, who would have said the white kid from Canada?
Yeah, it was Steve Nash, and there was like Ray Allen and a bunch of other people in the photo.
Yeah, because Kobe only had one, didn't he? Regular season MVP? Yeah. There you go.
The Raptors took goddamn Marcus Camby that draft, too, who ended up like being okay, but we think about what we could have had.
Well, we wouldn't have gotten Kobe, but we still would have had Ray Allen or Steve Nash. But even Steve Nash was like Phoenix got lucky. They got rid of him just in time for him to come back when he got good.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, man.
I think with this draft, like, I hate to bring it back to 06, but in that draft, there's maybe 9 or 10 guys that came out of 60 total players that were good. I feel like this draft's going to be the exact same. Where we're going to look back in a few years and be like, man, this draft was terrible. There was only like 10 good players. So here's praying the Raptors get one of those 10.
I know. And it's a sad day when you know that you can go back 10 years ago, look at a guy like Brandon Roy and be like, wow, he stopped playing like about 6-7 years ago, and he still probably has more points in the league than about 90% of the guys on that list.
100%.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, just like give me a crazy prediction on like a draft, maybe a draft trade, a draft pick, or something like that. Like just something out of the box. You just think like, you know, the Warriors trade Harrison Barnes for the 6th pick in the draft, and then they draft somebody.
I know, I got one too, actually.
You go first. He knows mine already, and he thinks it's outlandish, but I feel like it's appropriate for Laker Nation. Go ahead.
Mine is, I actually got it off of, I was taking a look at the ESPN articles, like some of the biggest shockers that they're predicting, and one of them was Thon Maker going 10.
Oh, wow.
Milwaukee Bucks picking up Thon Maker at 10.
Oh.
So that's my – I'll go with that one because honestly, why the hell not? Out getting drafted higher than Kobe Bryant out of high school.
Okay, what about you, Chris?
I think Vivek Ranadive from Sacramento Kings would be crazier to take him at 8 because he's the most psychotic owner in the league. So he could do that. But I have two other ones. I'll start with the lower one first. The Sixers, they like this draft, clearly. And this is Brian Colangelo, so he doesn't give a rip. He'll do whatever he needs to do to get who he likes because he's the smartest guy in the room. Just ask him. He'll let you know. I feel like they'll trade whatever they need to get to number 3 with the Celtics. Take their Chris Dunn. Then they'll trade back into the top 10 again with, I don't know, let's say they part ways with Jahlil Okafor at 3. And then he trades Nerlens Noel to somebody to get back in the top 10 again. They take another player. So they end up finishing with 3 picks in the top 10 of this draft. I feel like that's a crazy, somewhat believable theory.
You know, whoever is making that trade with the 76ers, I think they just cashed out in that scenario.
Me too.
Like, that's a huge, huge cash out. I don't really think Chris Dunn is like worth that much.
All the while.
Neither do I, but now for the craziest one. This is one you know.
Okay.
The Chicago Bulls today trade Derrick Rose.
Yes.
Let's say the Chicago Bulls have just had enough and they're ready to blow this up and they feel like they don't have the pieces to make a winner. So they want to get as much as they can for Jimmy Butler. Jimmy Butler to the Lakers for the number 2 pick, D'Angelo Russell, and Julius Randle. I think that would be like the craziest stretch splash blockbuster I could think of, is the Lakers make an all-in push for Jimmy Butler. That's my best one.
Okay. You know, one that isn't as crazy and might actually happen is like Chicago trades Jimmy Butler to the Celtics for like the 3... and whatever they have in the teens, and then like another one, and then they probably get like Avery Bradley or Jay Crowder back.
Yeah, I could see that too, actually.
Right, so hey man, the Celtics would do that trade too. They want any star player on their team right now, like literally anybody. Just please.
I think it'd be interesting to see if Butler ended up going to the Lakers, because I think the Bulls and the Lakers just swapped their positions in hell if that were to happen.
Well, hello to more Jimmy Butler post-ups.
Oh, could you imagine?
Oh my god.
Hey man, he's just like, I don't get this two-guard, like the 90s two-guard reinvention where it's just like Jimmy Butler, DeMar DeRozan. Like, I'm just going to post you up and shoot mid-range twos instead of the three for no reason.
Yeah, I don't know either. But do you think Jimmy Butler's worth, like, as much as people are saying right now? I've even seen Chris Middleton's name come up a lot with the Celtics, him and Jabari Parker. But the things that are floating around with Jimmy Butler right now, man, I think he's a very good player, but I don't think he's, like, worth the whole entire farm good.
Yeah, he's like a tier two star player.
Yeah, right?
Maybe, like, he's like the gatekeeper between two and three. No, like, above them, there's, like, LeBron James or...
Look, I think the
LeBron
way that...
LeBron James, like, Steph Curry, you know, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, and then below them is, like, John Wall and, like, CP3, and, you know, you would have, like, Jimmy Butler is, like, on the lower end of that. Like, maybe DeMarcus Cousins is probably in the second tier as well. And then, like, below them would be, like, you know, Brad Beal, like that.
I think after pretty much losing Derrick Rose after his knees, I think Chicago were just that desperate to just have anyone that would be of a use or value to them as an all-star, and Jimmy Butler just happened to be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
They did develop him.
He's definitely good now. Like, there's no real holes in his game other than the fact that he doesn't shoot the ball. Like, that he doesn't shoot the three ball effectively.
Yeah.
It's been steadily improving, though, which is nice for him. Like,
I heard the worst thing, like, when I watch basketball, like, I'm a huge proponent for, like, space in the floor. Like, that's why I love watching the Warriors play, because I'm like, this is how you should play basketball, the team game. And I'm like, I heard Jimmy Butler on Bill Simmons' podcast where they were talking about him shooting the three. That's his, like, next evolution as a player. Especially as a shooting guard, you should definitely shoot the three.
Yep.
And his response to that is, like, the same response DeMar DeRozan had to, I think, Zach Lowe, where they both said, I don't really see why I would shoot the three when I can get to the rim.
Yeah.
Pretty much every time that I want. I'm like,
he basically said, I can score closer to the basket. I listened to that same podcast. He just said, I can get to the cup.
It just doesn't make sense to me, because if you shoot the three effectively, then it makes it so much more easier
to attack the basket.
So much easier to attack the basket.
Well, you gotta respect me on the perimeter even more.
Right. So, like, they would play up on you, so it's easier to drive to the basket. And shooting in the paint can be your primary weapon, but you still gotta hit the three, man.
I think that's just ego talking for the both of them when they're talking to journalists, as opposed to discussing the coaches. Because I'm certain coaches have been explaining that to them for the better half of a year or two at least, especially with the way the league's going.
Ed Hoiberg probably has, but I don't think. Casey is.
I don't think him and Hoiberg really get along as much as Chicago would like him to.
Oh, definitely not.
He probably doesn't. Oh, man.
Except to Butler, he would have went to Minnesota with Thibodeau.
Well, if I was the damn coach and I heard him say, like, on an interview or something, that I don't need to shoot the three because, you know, I can get to the cup, he shows up to practice the next day, I'm going to have a rack of balls all along the perimeter and say, shoot them all.
Actually, I wouldn't even do that. I'd just be like, you 1v1, two guys in the paint. I want to see you score on two guys consistently. That's the only way you would be able to justify not shooting threes to me, is like, you have to finish every time at the rim.
Yep, because when it matters in the playoffs, they're not calling that whistle, so you better make sure you finish.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We saw that all playoff series with the Raptors. So.
Hey, man, they got some calls. They did get calls.
As time went on, when they finally showed that they had some spine.
You know, the league doesn't make that many tiki-tack fouls in the playoffs. Like, there's a lot more physical play happening. You saw it with Steph Curry, where, like, anytime he was running, molested. Somebody just had their body attached to him, you know?
Yep.
Body, arms, like... So I can't imagine that, you know, the same amount of fouls are going to get called in the playoffs when they're doing that to, like, basically one half of the face of the NBA.
Hmm. Be surprised.
Well, I think that just about wraps up our draft stuff here, guys. I mean, is there any other storylines you're looking forward to for this draft? It sounds like we kind of covered them all.
new storylines. I want to see the Nets do something. The Nets will make a trade.
Brooklyn.
Well, all they can really trade is that.
Trade Brooke Lopez for anything.
Bag of pucks.
The Nets, you guys are terrible, please.
Even the Islanders are in town now. They could trade for a bag of pucks.
They could help.
They hate Brooke Lopez.
Put him on skates, maybe.
I'm gonna hashtag save that tomorrow night.
Save Brooke Lopez.
He's a good player, man. He is.
Oh no, he is. I know. That's why I find it hilarious. Him,
free him.
Oh my god! From this Russian gulag that he's in.
Right.
This is probably one to make the podcast. But like, where do you guys like? What can they do with Brooke Lopez just so they have a draft? They would probably be able to get a couple draft picks for him. And he's getting older. Like, he's not going to be there when they're rebuilding the team.
They're going to rebuild till 2030, man.
That's what I was about to say. I'm like, that's what you think.
Yeah, so, like, let's make the trade. There's no point in keeping him on the team. Just get some draft picks. Maybe even, like, a later mid-first rounder. So the thing is, they know that they're terrible. Like, the entire league knows that they're terrible, so they're not going to give them anything good.
Do the Nets know they're terrible? Does ownership know they're terrible?
They have to.
They're just nonsense. They're a couple players away.
There's no way to not. Dude, they didn't even make the playoffs this year. There's like non-competitive.
It is sad to see.
You just showed up in Brooklyn and got a win. Jared Jack is their starting power point guard.
They're Jared terrible.
Jack.
Yeah, they're terrible.
The best thing they have is Prokhorov probably has a vodka connection, so they get unlimited vodka. That's their best thing about them.
Oh my god.
They have Bojan Marjanovic? No.
They didn't get him, did they?
Bojan Bogdanovic. Yes.
Bogdan, baby.
Yeah.
Got him. They got Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. They got...
Shimmy Shake, my dude.
And they got Brook Lopez. So they got like three guys.
Oh, you missed Thaddeus Young, too.
I don't like... Again, he's a power forward that can't shoot, so I don't
like that Young either.
I don't consider him a good team player. If you're a power forward and you can't shoot the ball, you're just... not a good player to me.
Any Raptors fan that pumps the tires of trade for Thad Young, I just cut them off right there.
Yeah, dude, there's no point in trading. I'd rather have Marcus than Thad Young.
I'd rather get a future draft pick.
Don't forget those cash considerations. And that concludes this episode of the TOT Cast. If you need to reach out to the show, you can reach us on Twitter at Tip of the Tower. Be sure to like our Facebook page, Tip of the Tower. You can also reach us out on iTunes, of course. We love the reviews, the 5-star reviews, and just write a quick review for us. Always appreciative when anyone can do that. If you want to reach out to myself, you can reach me at RyanGreco416 on Twitter. Reach Chris O'Kranitz at Chris O'Kranitz, and you can always reach Damar at DamarJG. Gentlemen, any closing thoughts for the day?
Draft Scal, please. Draft Scal.
Chris?
I was actually going to say Draft Scal.
Draft Scal.
That's actually what I was going to say, so take Scal number 9, or for the love of God, trade out of it.
Please just Draft Scal, and then you guys, everybody will be like, oh, well, he's too skinny, and then in year 2, people will be like, this guy is a beast.
We can shout it from the mountaintops. If they didn't hear it, they heard it here first on the TOT Cast. Draft Scal. Hashtag Draft Scal. Have a good night.
I can't wait until the draft.
Awesome. Have a good night, guys.